with a positive preparation for disaster. This is Community Alert, keeping you informed about how to be prepared, not if, but when disaster strikes. Tuesdays at 11 a.m. and 9 p.m. and Saturdays at 1 p.m. on KZSB, AM 1290, Santa Barbara News Press Radio.
Hello, folks. This is your Community Alert program, Not If, But When, Positive Preparation for Disaster. I'm here with Mom, Ted Adams. I'm here with Mike Williams today, and we're going to be spending the next hour with you chatting about some of the situations that we have in Santa Barbara County and speaking with Herb McElway, who is the former chief from Montecito Fire Protection District and many other jobs within the fire agency network. Mike, before we get to chatting with Herb, there's a couple of things we're talking about before the program started, and let's take a look at some of that. What do we got?
I just want to welcome Herb to the show. Welcome to.
Thank you.
And,
man.
Of course, Richard on the board working with us today.
You bet.
I just want to take a moment to thank the Santa Barbara community for nominating the Wildland Residents Association and San Marcos Pass Volunteer Fire Department as local heroes in the 2008 Thanksgiving
issue. Congratulations on that.
It really would hit home with the folks up there on the hill. They really appreciate it.
Well, nice picture of everybody.
Yeah. I also know that there were quite a bit of nominations for the Semper Station 1040, which we also appreciate. So it's always nice to know that your efforts are noticed by the community that you're hopefully working it towards.
Absolutely.
Serving.
So.
Absolutely.
Let's get today's guest, Herb.
Sure. Well, Herb, we're really happy to have you here with us today because you're one of the icons in the fire protection and fire service in our area. What was it that what brought you into fighting fire? I know that you started very early, but how did you get involved? What inspired you to become a firefighter?
Well, it was probably my father. He was with the U.S. Forest Service.
Really?
And back in the 40s and 50s. And having observed a lot of the activity and so forth, I guess it was kind of like being a naturalization of a Forest Service brat, being raised into the fire service. And so that was kind of my incentive.
Well, I understand it's carried forward to a next generation as well.
It's clear down to my grandson.
Oh, is that
so,
right? Oh,
yeah, I have a grandson that's a firefighter in Sedona, Arizona, and both my sons are in the fire service.
Outstanding. Well, you've got a firm foothold in that whole industry. We were talking a little bit before the show started and about you started out in 1952 in the fire suppression business and got involved with the forest in 53. Is that correct?
That's correct. In 1952, the logging industry was quite active in Northern California at that time, Sacramento Box and Lumber Company. And they hired a few of us young kids to be on their water tanker to go out. And if a fire started in the logging area, we went out and started spray water on it and started our own fire activity suppression until the Forest Service arrived. And then, of course, the next year I was at the age where I could go to work for the U.S. Forest Service and went on a fire
crew. How long did you do that?
For about 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
Worked with U.S. Forest Service on the Plumas National Forest and then transferred to the Los Padres in the 60s. And then transferred from the Los Padres Forest, I left the Forest Service, went to Santa Barbara County Fire Department. Spent 29 years with Santa Barbara County Fire.
Wow.
Retired, went to Montecito Fire Department for 13, some time is getting away from me as fire chief. And I retired in 2000. And since I've been on the Los Padres Interagency Team 7 as a liaison officer and have functioned as liaison officer on numerous Type 1 teams throughout the national fire system.
The way that I was first introduced to you was when you were with the County Fire Department and the Wildland Residents Association was just getting established after the Sycamore Canyon fire. And the thing that was so remarkable about yourself was that you were interested in embracing the private community and getting their perspective and assisting us as kind of rebels. And we started a volunteer fire department when no one thought that that would be possible, simply because we were experiencing long response times for our area, and we felt that we needed to have better fire protection. And at that time, most of the people thought that it was ridiculous for what we were trying to achieve, and you were just the opposite. You were very supportive of that. And as time went forward, you supported us, and I went to you, as you remember, and asked a lot of questions, and you helped us tremendously. And then after you made the changeover to Montecito, you got involved with Sacramento for a number of things, and then helped us get the Fire Safe Council started. The whole process, the red flag alert, a number of things were kind of sprang from you. How did you get those ideas? What was it that brought a broader perspective? How do you see that?
Well, I think, Ted, you know, in the fire service, we pretty traditionally function for many years, and which is good in many respects. But what I found as I grew in the fire service, and I needed to find out what the people wanted. And as I become involved in working in fire prevention and working with folks out here trying to establish how we can better do our job, it really come apparent that we weren't really doing some of the things that the local folks were really expecting us to do. Mm-hmm. And those were things like, you know, response time, supporting a local volunteer fire company. You know, people would say, well, that can't happen. Well, sure it can. I mean, there's no reason as long as we follow some basic guidelines. And what was so inspirational about Ted, yourself, and Mike, and the WRA, you folks all said, hey, let's outline those things. Let's see what we need to do to be sure we're in compliance with those things. We're not out here to be the real rabble-rouser. I always considered you as kind of a person that just kept asking the question, Ted, you know, and I had to come up with an answer. And those answers, as I found, I grew because it helped me to understand better how and why you could do what you're doing. And it was a real asset, I believe, all the communities in the Wildland Association.
Well, I know that you hit on an interesting issue there. Ron Coleman, I know, a longtime friend of yours, former state fire marshal and a guest on this show, he just recently did an article in Fire Chief Magazine about that very issue, about how the traditional fire service is so focused on stats, response time, cost, those kinds of things, that they've completely lost sight of who they're actually working for, the shareholders of their community, which is the residents and the businesses. And it was a good article. He was comparing the fire service with the statisticians of Major League Baseball and the fascination with numbers, which in reality don't really tell you anything. Mm-hmm. When it gets into who you're trying to work for, it only appeases your accounting office.
Well, I think that what happened with us was that we saw that there was an opportunity to assist the fire agencies, that it wasn't anything other than being able to do a job that that needed to be done in the interim before the agencies arrived. So that what we tried to do is we tried to be first response, get there, spray some water on a fire that was 6 feet in diameter rather than waiting 20 minutes when it was half an acre. And as soon as the agencies arrived, we would back off and allow them to do their job, which he did much better than we did. It was just the fact that we were able to be there first.
And well, that, wasn't Herb that coined the phrase self-help? Well, that has made its way all the way up into the hallowed halls of the Capitol now, that the term self-help actually means something, and that's exactly what we're talking about.
Well, right? I think one of the things, too, and I might just back up a little bit, Ron Coleman was always one of my mentors. I had a great respect for Ron Coleman and through the years and our association. And another person was Bill Patterson, who was a fire chief with the county.
He's the one
and,
that helped us.
And those are the folks that they inspired me to also remember this self-help, because we can't do it all. And, of course, if you stop and think about it, that's why we're in ICS today,
Incident Command System,
is because, you know, the self-help thing is we need everybody's help. And, you know, the more that people can help before we get there, I found that the biggest challenge in working with WRA and the volunteer was saying, let's do the training. Let's get the training.
Right.
And once we do that, and once you've done that, and you've done that, you've done it very successfully. And I applaud you, because I think that, again,
Mike really deserves a lot of credit there, because he was the one that really grabbed that and made that happen. So we're going to continue this conversation. I think we've got to take a break
real quick. When we come back, I'd like to get into the wildland fire history here in Santa Barbara and what worked and what didn't work back in the 60s and 70s as they relate to what we see today with Zaca and the Gap Fire. This is Community Alert, Not If But When, Positive Preparation for Disaster with Ted Adams, Mike Williams. We're visiting today with Herb McElway, former fire chief, Montecito Fire Protection District. And I can't forget the man behind the dials, Richard Dugan. We'll be back with you in just a minute on KZSB 1290, your AM News Press Radio.
Welcome back, folks. This is KZSB AM Radio News Press, and this is Community Alert. Not If But When, Positive Preparation for Disaster. We're here this afternoon, myself, Ted Adams, Mike Williams, my co-host, and we're here with Herb McElway, past chief of the Montecito Fire Protection District, and longtime member of the fire community. And we're talking about the history of fire in Santa Barbara County and the ramifications of many of the fires that we've had here in the past and how things have changed. Mike, I'm going to let you talk with Herb a little bit about some of that.
Herb, one of the things, I come from the law enforcement world, and I like to dig a disclaimer whenever it's appropriate, because I do not have a career fire background, and so I look at things from a little bit different perspective. That has its pros and it has its cons. But when I look at the wildfire history for Santa Barbara, it's fascinating to me, because we've had some of the largest fires in the history of California in Santa Barbara. Recently, it was the Zaca fire, which was well over 200,000 acres, and then, of course, the Gap fire, which was a little less than 10,000, but certainly caught the national attention. How are fires today within Santa Barbara County and Southern California, for that matter, because they're very similar, different and versus the same as they were, say, back in the 50s, 60s, and 70s? What's changed and what hasn't?
Well, I think a couple of things in relationship to the fire activity. We have a tremendous larger encroachment as far as the wildland interface. You know, people are building into the forested areas, the wildland areas, and of course that complicates your fire suppression activities, your fire losses, and it also creates the potentials of additional fires. So it's the massive increase interface building
and homes
in the interface. I think that the what we've seen over the years is the ability to come together, and you know, it took a number of years for the fire service to see what the issues were in relationship to how we can better manage our wildland fires. And over the years, you know, we used to pass each other on the road going to Ventura to a fire, and they're coming north to a fire, and, you know, you're wondering what's going on. Well, through the FireScope system and through the ICS system, this all turned around, and all the partners that you see out there today, the counties, the state, the OES, the U.S. Forest Service, the National Park Service, these people all come together, and we come up with a what they called a fire scope, and somebody thought it was a funny looking little thing you look through like a gyroscope, but it did. It gave us a different configuration of how we needed to do business.
Now, fire scope, for the benefit of our listeners, came out of the Governor's Office of Emergency Services back in the beginning days.
In the 70s.
Right.
Right. And this came out as a very important, necessary thing to be looked at. So I had the honor and privilege of being 15 years on the FireScope Task Force in the development of that process. And what we found is now the way we manage fires versus how we were doing it back in the 50s, in the 60s, in the 70s, even the Sycamore Fire was on the edge of some of the those things. We had, now we have fire management team. These people are professional. They're well-trained in their positions. And we'll never forget the engine companies. Those engine companies, the firefighters, those are the guys that really do the work. But the manager of the incident, when you have an incident and you have three entities that are involved in that incident, a county, a city, a national forest, and you can't talk to each other, and everybody's doing their own thing, what do you end up with? Chaos.
Well, you know, what's interesting is I've done a lot of research for the Fire Services Training Institute as we started building the business plan, and it was intriguing to me how much Santa Barbara County has been a participant in the development of the wildland fire business for probably 40, 50 years. Chief Sherry sits on FireScope today. Santa Barbara County was the leader for ICS. Chief Prince over at Santa Barbara City has written several books. They've been a part of the Cal Chiefs Association for Wildland Interface. It goes way, way back. Santa Barbara's been on the point, and I don't think the public realizes how progressive in many ways Santa Barbara County has been in the in wildland interface issues.
Well, I think Santa Barbara County Fire, has been a leader, and when we started the FireScope process, initially there was Southern California Association of Forestry and Fire Wardens. Santa Barbara County, again, was a participant in that process. And through that process, we've been able to advance ourselves in the technology, and Santa Barbara County has been a leader in moving along to ensure that that is brought forth to all fire service. The fire services within Santa Barbara County have been also very, very aggressive in being a part of that process. You know, when you talk about an area of the county, we're talking about Santa Maria City, Lompoc City, Santa Barbara City, Montecito, Carpinteria, you know, your fire districts and so
forth.
Well,
I think it's because fire is so much a part of our everyday life here in Santa Barbara. I mean, it's right in our face. We've got that mountain that goes up behind us, and that's where we see the flames, if not just the smoke. It makes it in all of our consciousness, and I think we push our agencies to be in the forefront, and they push themselves as well. So it's one of those situations.
And Herb, I want to ask you a question, and this is multi-layered question. You know, we've seen the evolution, and you've certainly seen it, in terms of firefighting. I'm curious as to, has there been any kind of evolution in fire in and of itself as far as what we've experienced in the last, say, 50 years that you've been in the business, as it were, as well as the firefighting techniques and or equipment? How has the fire changed, and how has fighting those fires changed?
Well, I think two things are. One, in relationship to your fuels, and when I talk about fuels, your brush, your trees, your shrubbery, and those type of things, and we're finding that we have a lot less fuel moisture in those. We have more homes built in around those type of areas, so the concentration of fire efforts is, you know, the fire becomes stronger, it becomes more radical in those type of areas. Now, as far as the technology, I think our training is enhanced. Our people are better trained. The equipment is becoming better equipment. We're getting better type of air support to come in and do critical attacks on these fires in the initial phases. I think, again, it's just a combination of those things. You know, we talk about global warming. Well, our fuels out there, even today after the rains we've had, we still have some areas that are potentially disasters fire-wise. Mm-hmm. And this is happening, you know, throughout the nation.
You mentioned air support, and I know during the Zaca fire and even the Gap fire, there was the interest in helicopter aircraft and, of course, the coveted DC-10. You've seen the whole evolution of aircraft coming into the fire suppression business. What's your impression of it today?
I'm very impressed, and especially with the heavy helicopters and that DC-10 also, and it has its place. some people were concerned about it being able to drop down into the bottom of the canyon and support those crews. That's not the intent of the DC-10.
No.
That's where your helicopters, your Type 1s, I think there have been great advantage in increasing the size of those helicopters and using those large ones, because they really get in and they can concentrate on those areas. So as far as the overall improvement, I remember the old TBMs and F7Fs and PBYs and some of those others that were great Second World War aircraft, and they did a job. They did a job for a number of years, and they were really an advantage to the fire service.
One of the things that's changed is the type of fire retardants also. I mean, they've gone through, in my memory, they've gone through three or four different compounds that they put into the drops that have been more and more effective. And then the air, compressed air foam is a new thing, and there's lots of new things out there that have helped a lot.
Yeah, I think that, that there's a technology there that's been a great advantage to us, the pretreatment, wrapping. You never heard of anybody going out and wrapping a building to prevent that building from burning with material that's, will prevent it from burning.
Yeah, I remember they did that to the
Cold Springs Tavern.
Well, Chief Coleman, when he was here, was talking about how a building today has to be able to protect itself.
Mm-hmm. That's right. And you shouldn't have to depend on being wrapped, and you really shouldn't have to depend on being foamed. Those are just capabilities mm-hmm. that are added to help protect. And we've changed from the old borate, if you remember back then.
Absolutely.
And that stuff used to set an airplane and sometimes come out in chunks when you're on the line. I mean, that was bad stuff. Well, their technology has made something that is extremely supportive to the fire service and supportive to the environment.
Well, we need to take a break here, Herb. When we come back, I'd like to continue talking about the history and certainly get into the hot button, the topic that basically created Community Alert, and that's the media. So this is Community Alert, not if, but when, positive preparation for disaster, with Ted Adams, Mike Williams, Richard Dugan on the board, and our guest today, Herb McElway, former fire chief, Montecito Fire Protection District. And we'll be back with you in just a minute.
The views expressed on Community Alert are not necessarily those of the staff, management, ownership, or advertisers of this station.
Hello, folks. Welcome back to KCSB News Press Radio. This is Community Alert, not if, but when, positive preparation for disaster. I'm Ted Adams. I'm here today with my co-host, Mike Williams, and our guest today is Herb McElway, with the former chief for the Montecito Fire Prevention District. I wanted just a note here. I want you to know that our program is broadcast three times a week, and that's at 11 a.m. and 9 p.m. on Tuesdays, and 1 in the afternoon, 1 p.m. on Saturdays. So if you hear about the program and you've missed it, you've got an opportunity to listen to it again.
Yeah, you can also get the schedule of upcoming guests on our website at wildlandresidents.org.
Yeah. So I'd like to follow up on the question I asked you regarding the evolution of firefighting, and you mentioned the DC-10. And when people see that flying over, whether it was the Gap Fire or the Zaca Fire, they thought, oh, my God, it's going to be put out. It's going to be great, And, of course, we've learned in this show that that isn't the case, that it is just another tool, and it's just helping the effort. Well, if the DC-10 is such a great thing because it holds so much retardant, why not use a larger aircraft, maybe like a C-140 or a modified 747 or, I don't know, B-52?
Well, I'm sure that there's people out there looking at that. I mean, we got to where we are today because people looked and researched. And, when you started talking about putting turbojet on an aircraft that was going to be dropping fire retardant, everybody said, oh, no. I mean, we'd been so used to the old DC or the TBM and the F7Fs and the single-engine aircraft and those type of things. When they started putting a turbojet on it, they're going to go so fast they can't take care of the situation. How big, how large, what size, what kind of turnaround. These things are constantly being researched. If you look at some of the things that they've done over history, very quickly, I had the opportunity of the night watching a show when back in the 30s, they were trying to build a type of aircraft that would help even the logging industry, and they had this big blimp with four helicopters hooked to it to be able to get out there quicker. Well, unfortunately, the blimp blew up. Well, that sets us all back and, you know, years and years and years. So every time we try these new ventures, and I admire the people that are constantly looking at these things and studying them and making it better for the firefighter and making it better for the community. This equipment is advanced. The technology is getting better. But, you know, it takes time. And usually the first step out of the barrel, and any time you have an accident with any type of aircraft, you can't imagine what happens. This thing just kind of folds back in, and you have to almost start over again to ensure that the safety is going to be continued out there for not only the people in the aircraft, but for the people on the ground.
Well, and answering Richard's question, Evergreen actually has aircraft 747s for this. Now, they're not using it for fire suppression. They're using it for other applications, but they do have 747s for deployment. But a good friend of mine, Sandy Willett, who was killed a couple of years ago flying CAL FIRE in Tulare County, was the lead plane for the DC-10, and he had some very interesting observations, because he grew up as a crop duster, so flying airplanes and doing all that was no big deal to him. But you can't do those things with a DC-10. The stall speed's at a much higher rate, the vortex is coming off the back, causing as many problems as they prevent. You've pretty much got to go straight. You can't come dipping in and pulling out the recovery.
What about
time.
The Super Scooper, that an aircraft that could...
LA County's using those.
Yeah, the Super Scooper has been that aircraft, of course, where it originated in the North Country, where they have a lot of lakes, and is very advantageous, and L.A. County has utilized a Super Scooper. You know, I think those things are all very positive, and I think, again, the research is being done out there. You see it constantly. You see where we are today with the DC-10, and I think that we just continue to support where we can those ventures, and, you know, that's not the world with all. That's not going to prevent every house from burning.
No.
The folks still have to take their own initiative, and they have to do some real work around their home.
In that respect, Herb, how do you feel about the people that choose to stay in their homes, home suppression systems? We've got a whole panorama of different types of foam systems and spray systems and that sort of thing to protect and to assist people to protect their homes. Where do you fall in that idea of shelter in place or staying with your home?
Well, you know, I like to support anyone that can do it safely. And I think that, you know, so many times we try to, from the fire service, I say we, when I say we, I'm talking in the fire service language, we look at incidents, we're trying to do projections, we're looking at the worst case scenario. One thing that really detracts your efforts from fire suppression is when you have to start concentrating on rescue.
Right.
And so, you know, it's kind of like what happened in the hurricane situation, where some folks said, well, we want to stay. And at midnight, they called and said, now we want out.
Yeah.
Well, it was too late.
Yeah.
And so to answer your question, I think if the people are prepared, if they understand what they're staying for and what they have to stay with, and they can do it safely, I'm all for supporting them to be able to protect their homes. But
I know that in Australia, of course, they've got the opposite idea that we have in this country, where they mandate people to stay in their homes and be ready to stay there under those conditions. And, of course, they've got some different factors that they deal with than we do, but they don't want people on the roads. They want to make sure that everyone is trained and prepared to stay with their homes in wildland situations. It's an interesting difference.
Ted, I think that, again, is where Fire Safe Council, WRA, I mean, that's what this is all about. Mm-hmm. You know, you folks are doing that with your communities and the fire districts, the county fire, the city fire. We need to do this with our community. You see them working out there, knocking on doors, talking to people about, you know, clearing around their home, being more fire safe. If their home is fire safe, if it's safe enough for a firefighter to go stand by, you know, and the people understand that. But the problem is that people are just saying, well, I don't want to leave because I have the confidence I'm going to be there when I come back. Well, you know, do you have the confidence you can stay there protect your home and take care of yourself.
Well, that's the tricky thing that I'm a great advocate for staying with your home, but at the same time, I recognize the situation where people will get the idea that they can stay with a home, and they'll take all the means to prepare for staying with their home. But when the fire comes into their backyard and they see the size of the flame and they feel the heat, then
it's commitment
then time. Panic takes over, and the rationale disappears. And I think that's the thing that's difficult to be able to project.
Well, we know that our training, our mechanism of training and awareness, is working up on the pass, because we have not had any incidents, whether it was the Gap fire or the Zacka fire or any of the vehicle fires that have gotten in the brush, where panic and fear have become problematic, where we've had a traffic accident or somebody's jackknifed a car, or in the scenarios that you frequently see down in Montecito where apparatus get blocked in by people trying to get out at the last minute. We've been very blessed.
Well,
so
I think that's
works.
One of the things is that we hammer on the idea of people taking personal responsibility and realizing enacting a scenario when there is no one else there to help, and they realize that they have to take responsibility. If someone's there, that's the luck of the gods.
Yeah, but to steal a line from Clint Eastwood, a man's got to know his limitations. And depending on the circumstances, I don't care who you are, the wildfire and fighting fire is one of the things that I probably have come to appreciate about firefighters and the profession more than anything else, is how absolutely physically on-demand, demanding physical it can become.
That's right.
And if you aren't ready for that, where you got to go from 0 to 60 in a heartbeat, literally, it's something you best stand back and let somebody else do. Right. Because I have a healthy respect for how physically demanding this business is.
I think you need to, and people need to look at, when you lose professional firefighters on wildland fires, I mean, there's a lot there to back up what Mike just said.
Absolutely. Well, we've got to take a break here. We're talking today with Chief Herb McElway, former Fire Chief, Montecito Fire Protection District, with Ted, myself, and Richard Dugan at the dials. I'd like to remind you this show airs on Tuesdays at 11 and again at 9 p.m. and Saturdays at 1. This is Community Alert, not if, but when, positive preparation for disaster on KZSB AM 1290, your Santa Barbara News Press Radio. We'll be back with you in just a moment.
Welcome back to Community Alert, folks. This is KZSB News Press Radio, and not if, but when, positive preparation for disaster. Ted Adams, Mike Williams, and Richard on the dials this afternoon, and we've got Herb McElway, a longtime firefighter and past chief of Montecito Fire District, talking with us today. And Mike, you want to pick up?
Herb, I want to get into the issue of the media. That's a hot item in this town. It's how Community Alert ultimately evolved into what it is now. It's what the mighty 1040, as we call it up on the Hill, became. And it all kind of grew out of the 2004 Gaviota fire. And I guess I'd start off with, how do large incidents like Zacka and Gap compare to large incidents back in the 60s and 70s as it relates to the media and getting the information out to the public? What are the differences now?
Well, I think a key difference is, as I can recall, and a number of fires in the Coyote fire, for example, we had news people from the news press, from the local, right there on the tailboard of the fire engine taking pictures and asking what was going on. Then it became an issue where they would want to go into a fire area that was maybe unsafe for themselves. So as time has went by, and this is another thing that I think that through FireScope, through the incident command system, the fire teams, they come in, they have their public information folks, pardon me, your local OES, the counties, you know, they have their information officers. They're working very strongly, the way I see it, to pull these together so that people are getting all the same answers to the questions they may have. Mm-hmm. You know, I found through Montecito with Mirage, they set up their little information, so they're giving out the same information that's coming across on the radio station on the pass. You know, this is a very, very important area that needs to be pursued, and to my knowledge right now, and some of the meetings that I have attended, that you folks are well aware of, that where they are talking media, information, trying to get information so that it's coming out kind of like one voice. I mean, you know, a lot of people don't realize out there or don't even think about what fire truck's showing up, and they really don't care as long as the fire engine shows up and doing their job. What we need to do is get that same thought process from a information going out, that we don't care as long as it's a straight information, who it's coming from, as long as everybody's speaking the same language.
Well, that almost becomes type of a choke point in its own little way, because in order for everything to be the same, it's got to go to one focal point so that it can be...
Well, it does that, though, Mike. If an incident, when it's run by a command team.
Mm-hmm.
That command team has an information officer section. Now, that information, anybody that wants information has access to that team information section. Now, if in the case of the Forest Service, it may be handled by the U.S. Forest Service Information Center at the supervisor's office, but it's still taking the information directly from the incident. Where you run into problems when people start freelancing, well, I see this, well, I see that. And what they need to do, because those information folks are required by the incident commander to keep everything current, as we can have current on the incident to go out to the general
public.
What
you see isn't necessarily what you see. An example would be a backfire, and somebody's thinking that suddenly there's this calamity occurring over on 123 Hauser Street, and oh my God, it's going up the hill and there's nobody there, where in fact it's a backfire that's part of the incident action plan. And so, and you talk about freelancing, there's a classic example that has happened in the past where people are reporting things that they see, that they think they see, but isn't what they really see. But, well, Richard, you had something.
Yeah, and this goes to being a member of the public. When I first moved here, I wasn't involved as I am today in trying to get information to the public. So I'm curious, how has the demand by the public for information about what's happening changed?
Well, I think a couple of ways. They want to be informed, and they want to know what's happening. When they see the smoke, they want to know what's happening. They want to know what the threat is. They want to know what potentially they need to be prepared for. And, you know, I think by having these things set up to where the information is flowing, where it can be broadcast, you know, and you're putting out the same message, is critical. And you know, I hear we have 3-4 different little radio stations now to broadcast emergency information. That needs to be correlated. Mm-hmm. Now, that needs to be correlated so that same message is coming out.
Well, the frustration that, I'm going to play devil's advocate a little bit here. I think on the public side, especially the public that lives in the wildland-urban interface in rural, rustic areas, is that smoke moves into their area. Ash is falling from the sky. You're starting not to be able to see well. You call a given number, the line is busy. You go to the radio and you twist and dial and you're not able to pull up anyone. And there's a certain amount of direct anxiety that comes into play. And so after the fact, the public is saying, well, why isn't there more direct information? Because I know that the forest and the IC system provides information twice a day at 6 in the morning and 6 in the evening is when they have their meetings, and that's when they print their maps maybe once a day. But for the public, especially since we have been educated to look for immediate information through the internet and those things, that this is a ponderously slow system, especially when you're looking at what road do I take to get safely out of my area. And I totally understand the frustration. I also understand the frustration on the agency side, because they're primarily involved in addressing the incident, you know, and there's a whole new process that's coming into play now, I think.
Well, during the Zacha fire, it was great because your team was over at the Live Oak, and it was the public information officers that were actually doing the broadcast on the Mighty 1040, which meant I wasn't doing it. It was coming straight from the fire camp, and that was great because it instilled confidence. It was good exposure for the team. It showed how the system worked, and it took control over what could potentially be a freelancing type situation.
Well, I think, too, you know, people do. They want to know immediately what's going on, and they want to find out what's happening. And you know, the public information folks that are working on an incident, they're working there until around the clock on that incident. So, you know, it's how that information is being disseminated out and where it's going to, and from that point. I think that there is a lot of work to be done in that area. And I think that, again, within Santa Barbara County here, there's an effort with some folks and through Fire Safe Council and through WRA and to see that that is accomplished.
Sure. Well, we got to take a break here, and it would be a good time to remind folks that while we're talking about wildfire, flooding is the number one problem for Santa Barbara County. So don't get too focused on the fires. Don't forget the floods and the earthquakes. We're here today with Chief Herb McElway, former fire chief of the Montecito Fire Protection District, Ted Adams, myself, Richard Dugan on the board. And this is Community Alert, Not If But When, your positive preparation for disaster. If you'd like to make any comments about the show, you can give us a call at the Wildland Residents Association, 964-7194. That's 964-7194. Or shoot us an email at the community@wildlandresidents.org email address. Or just send us a mail here at the station and we'll get it and we'll answer your questions happily. This is KZSB AM 1290, Santa Barbara News Press Radio. We'll be back with you in just a minute.
The views expressed on Community Alert are not necessarily those of the staff, management, ownership, or advertisers of this station.
Welcome back, folks, to KZSB News Press Radio. This is Ted Adams and Mike Williams with our guest today, Herb McElway. Our program is Community Alert, Not If But When, Positive Preparation for Disaster. And we're talking this afternoon about all facets of community awareness and fire and different ways of addressing the fire problems. And I'm going to turn this over to Mike and let him go with it.
Thank you. Richard, you had a quick question you want to pop in there.
Mike, you addressed the issue of people getting concerned. They see the smoke and they start making phone calls and they get real concerned. And it turns out that it's nothing more than the fire service in the middle of a forest fire. They're doing backfires.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the Forest Service and everybody that's trained learns the signs. They learn how to read the smoke, the winds, all of those elements to help them better suppress this fire. Why not provide that same information as sort of a calming agent or, hey, this is a fire that's heading your way, the winds are blowing your way, get out of the way, kind of general information for the public so that, again, they want information. What better information can they have? All they have to do is look up the hill. They don't have to call anybody. They've seen all of the information, say, on a website or in a brochure. Granted, there's nothing concrete, but at least it gives them something.
Richard, I think what happens is that people want to make contact with someone that they perceive knows more than they do.
Mm-hmm.
And they really don't want to rely on themselves to be looking at a website or to. That's why we find that the phone lines get so plugged up.
That's a good point.
Because I think that everybody wants to have that reassurance that someone else knows more about it than they do and they're going to get direct communication from
them. Herb, you want to comment on that?
Well, I think. Again, in the planning stages, when they know they're going to be doing some firing out operations and they're doing some specific burns, backfiring, whatever terminologies they want to use, that information will be out. There are some cases when that has to be done because all of a sudden they've had a shift and you don't have time to go out and you know, the operational section and your division is working and saying, hey, you know, we've got to do a firing operation here. 90% of the time, this is in the planning stages.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't get it down to the point to where they're going to know every second. There's going to be times when people see smoke and they're going to say, wow, that looks bigger than we thought it should be.
Sure.
Well, maybe it's bigger than what the fire service thought it should be, too. So, you know, these type of things happen. So now as quickly as they can, though, this information will be gotten back to the information officers so they can get this information back out appropriately to the communities. And I say, again, I want to reiterate, 90% of the time when they're going to do a large firing operation that will show a different impact, That is in the planning stages. It's not just coming off the seat.
It just happened.
So,
I know that during the Zacha fire, we were notified repeatedly of when they were going to do either burnouts, where they're burning out area that hadn't burned but needed to go because it was in the black, or they were going to do some serious backfiring, because most of that was at night, and some of it was very spectacular. But we tried to get that information out so that people would know that what you're seeing is controlled, it's planned for, it's part of the big picture.
You need to understand, too, that when you're doing a firing out operation, it's critical because there's a lot of safety issues.
Right, and safety is huge. But I'm sorry we're running out of time here. It's time to close out the show. Before we end, I'd like to remind everybody to, if you haven't already gotten a copy of Living with Wildfire, a guide for homeowners in Santa Barbara County, we'd encourage you to get down by the Red Cross and pick one of those up. It's a collaborative effort between State Farm Insurance, Fire Safe Council, and State Farm. This has been Community Alert, Not If But When, Positive Preparation for Disaster. We'll see you next week.
With John Allman.
This has been Community Alert. Community Alert is produced by the Santa Barbara County Fire Safe Council in association with the Wildland Residents Association, San Marcos Pass Volunteer Fire Department. Production assistance provided by Richard Dugan and Jim Williams. This is KZSB AM 1290, the Santa Barbara News Press radio station.
Caltrans, SB CAG, and the City of Santa Barbara will be making many improvements to Highway 101 in Santa Barbara. Hello, I'm Caltrans Director Will Kempton. To reduce congestion and improve safety, freeway lanes will be added and local streets will be improved. This project is funded by Measure D and State Proposition 1B bond funding. During construction, Highway 101 and local streets will remain open. Please remember to drive safely and slow for the cone zone. For more information, visit sbroads.com or call 1-888-SB-ROADS.